With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Soul Sisters, everybody. Jessie Katz here.
Dara Golub here.
Two 90s girls coming at you with an iconic 90s girl.
For sure.
On the show today, Vanessa Carlton.
MTV era, deep TRL MTV era 90s yes. Female piano playing rock star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 1,000 Miles was everywhere in our lives and brains and iPods, because we didn't have
right.
them then. But
Discmans, yeah. CD players in the car uh-huh. in high school.
Yep.
And just MTV, it just reminds me of that whole time when you would turn on, I feel it was like 3:30.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Carson Daly,
yep,
MTV
school.
Video rundowns, the lost era.
Yeah.
But,
by the way, someone just showed me this video on YouTube that is Grand Theft Auto set to 1,000 Miles, because I guess there's a thing you can do in Grand Theft Auto where you're like playing a piano and like zooming down the street, like the 1,000 Miles music video.
So, like, that's
a
music option?
There's, like,
within?
A player in the game.
What a random, that's, like, such like, a juxtaposition.
I know, it's
so
really
random.
Bizarre. Yeah. Anyway, but so she's still very relevant
totally.
To culture today.
And her new record is beautiful and different and new and sounds...
Liberman,
right?
And Liberman Live,
mm-hmm.
which she's touring on right now.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, so she popped by and talked about all the things from the 90s through now. And
persevering.
Yeah, exactly. Thriving.
Through stardom.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, here it is. Vanessa Carlton on Soul Sisters.
Sorry to say hi to you. Nice to meet you.
He's our male ally on Soul Sisters.
We have many. Is Victor in there? Okay, cool.
Victor is our canine ally.
Yes.
Mascot.
He's the mascot, yes.
All right. So, big day for Soul Sisters. Vanessa Carlton is here. Vanessa, hello.
Hello.
And you have a special friend joining us at the top of the episode.
Yes.
Will you please introduce our other extra guest?
This is my friend and teacher, Tina Schaefer.
Hello.
Hello, Tina.
Hi, you guys.
So, all right, explain your relationship for those listening.
Okay, so Tina and I met when I was about 17, working on my first batch of demos. I think I had just left ballet school, and she was teaching me a vocal technique. She's amazing. Well, she's a songwriter herself, opera singer. I should just be letting you talk. Vocalist. And because I think she's trained in opera, she had this amazing vocal techniques to avoid getting nodes on your vocals. So when people lose their voice or get super raspy, it's that their chords are rubbing the wrong way. Anyway, she taught me this amazing technique back when I was 18. I've never gotten nodes. And most importantly, she booked me at my first real gig ever in New York City at the Singer-Songwriter Circle at the Bitter End. So right. Tina, you can tell them more about what that is. But
tell
you
us
can
about
take
little
it.
Vanessa.
Little Vanessa. We know
oh
lots
God.
About little
That's not
Vanessa.
What I meant.
We have videos of you when you were little Vanessa.
Oh,
how old were you when you started your mother sent to us?
Oh my God. I think I met you when I was probably 17.
16 or 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were just leaving ballet school, and I met you through, at then, he was a radio promoter who I believe worked for Atlantic Records, and his name was Herb Rosen.
Yes, Herb Rosen.
And I always want to give people credit where credit is due. And he's still bumping around. I think he's living in Florida, but he was how I met Vanessa.
He's an OG, that guy. old school.
Oh, old school.
Original gangster. I mean,
yes.
Sorry.
Oh, yes. Like, I'm so
It's like whatever about. So no, it's annoying. Him. Sorry.
I know my kids. I'm like, you're so not.
I think you're an OG. It's okay if you don't know what it means. You are also one.
I'm an old gangster?
Yeah.
It's like the highest compliment.
Oh, that's the highest compliment. Okay.
Trust me.
Oh, brother. And I met Vanessa, and he gave me at that time a cassette tape of her music. And it was so, being from a classical background, it was so piano driven and so beautiful and so intelligent. And
where did you record that, Vanessa?
It was just
in my parents' house in Pennsylvania.
Not very organic.
Yeah,
it's a songs cassette that you had
tape.
Written?
Yeah,
okay.
Cassette tapes sound good.
I think art
even
was,
when they're like bad songs, I feel like it
Ordinary
just makes
Day
every,
was on that, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I remember I booked you for the first New York Songwriter Circle. It had just started in 1991. It is now 25 years old.
Legendary.
Tell them some of the artists that play that, because it's actually many artists play that circle and then go on to have like these big careers.
Yeah, well, that's true, including starting with you and Norah Jones and Jesse Harris and Lana Del Rey. I'm Big and Rich, Gavin DeGraw. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's been unbelievable.
And so you sit with other songwriters and play your tunes in a circle.
It's in, in the round that's really was taken from the Bluebird, really.
Yeah, the Nashville thing.
Yeah. And Ken Gorka, the late Ken Gorka, who we both loved, who owned the Bitter End. It was his brainchild. And then I got to run it all these years. And, you know, we just used people on our Rolodexes back then. And we were all starting out in the business together. None of us had made any money. None of us, you know, we were just starting out. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being so moved by Vanessa. And I introduced her to my then husband and still friend, Peter Zizzo, who became one of her producers and also saw the talent in her. And then she's come back to do the circle.
I love New York because only in a place like this, I just drove in from Massachusetts this morning, and like Tina's a friend and she's like, I'm not going to be coming through. I'll come say hi. And then like, here we are.
Yeah.
Like only in New York, you know?
It's true.
It's a block away.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
So amazing. Yeah. It is.
What do you each remember about that first gig?
Oh, I don't remember it at all, actually.
I remember. Yeah. I totally remember something. And you're going to laugh. You're going to call me. What did you think? OG? OD?
Yeah, OG.
I remember telling you, you played Ordinary Day, and I said, that could be a hit song. I remember hearing that song, and it was so raw. She was such a diamond in the rough. Uh-huh. You know, her voice was very different back then.
But so did you study classical
like
together?
No, she...
It's a combination, right?
Yeah. Latina taught me... She was my vocal coach. So she's like a properly trained singer. And a lot of the artists, I guess, that you would come across, you would also give them lessons. I needed lots of help back then. I don't think I even like really got footing on my voice until about 5 years ago, to be honest.
Beautiful.
But I remember that. That was cool because... That song, Ordinary Day, I had been told by this very famous producer once I had gotten signed that that's a nice song. I can't remember his name. He like produced a lot of the early Madonna stuff. Mm. And he was like, we're just going to have to change the time signature, but I think that will be a great song. Mm. I was like, change the time signature? He's like, waltzes don't get played on the radio.
Oh, please.
And I was like, in my mind, it's so funny. I was like such a... stubborn little at such an early age, because he had such a bigger like track record than I had done nothing, but in my mind I was like, no, it can only be a waltz. Like, how do you turn a waltz into anything else? That's so sweet that you
I think that was
probably helpful to me that you had said something about the songs. I was like, no, I feel like it can work like this, you know?
Yeah.
When you're young, you're so like malleable
and taking everyone else's. Well, you held to your own. It was really a true artiste.
And here she is.
That's a nice way to put it.
This is great. Today is the Day Without Women.
International.
And here
women.
We all are together. If they're looking for us, they can know where we were.
Great idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you, Tina.
Absolutely.
So I feel like we got a little bit of the backstory, but I want to just go a little bit more further back if we could. When did you start taking piano lessons?
When I was very young, like probably three-ish, four, because my mother is a pianist and a piano teacher. Like, there's no way around it.
Was she your first teacher?
Yeah.
Of course.
And she taught at home, so all the kids would come to our house twice a week. And she taught kind of like this Montessori style. So it'd be like group lessons, but then we'd each get our own time at the piano with her overseeing us. And then we'd go back into the group. And there was like lollipops. And like she really nailed it with the vibe back then. So I was into it.
Yeah. So it wasn't like a trickier thing because she was your mom and you're like, no, mom, I don't want to listen to you. It was like a pleasant experience.
Yeah, and I wanted to be part of all the other kids.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew I was the youngest one and it was cool.
So you picked it up easily and then practicing was easy and just so like from 3-4 you were on the path.
No. I would say my mother is pretty progressive and she was classically trained and was, you know, I am classically trained on the piano, so those are many of the pieces that I learned. She would also let me improvise over certain parts of the music. So she would not correct me all the time. And that was like a strategic choice on her part. And I think that led to now, like Sky and I discussed this, Sky, who's playing violin later, you know, we're both classically trained, but we have the freedom to write and improvise. And I think that comes from the way and the style that you were trained sometimes.
That makes sense.
You know?
And I feel like that makes you a very comfortable live performer, right?
That was like, I will call that a muscle that has to be strengthened. I don't think
still?
It got that good until later on.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To put on a show, that's something else.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, do you mean like performing of just the music, like as the like the instrumental pieces and that?
Yeah, I guess like I'm particularly intrigued by the fact that you have now put out two live albums back to back, and this seems to be something that you are really presenting yourself as. It's like I'm someone who puts on a great live show, and these songs are very dynamic and interesting to listen to in this live format. Even if I also just put this out as a studio album previously, but now I'm also going to offer you the live version. You know?
Well, I will say this. It is my first live collection ever, period. Uh-huh. I don't think I was ready to do it until now.
Okay.
And it was also my manager's idea.
So. Okay. It's great.
And then I'm glad.
That's an honest answer.
I think he picked up on, though, that we had really hit our stride live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting good. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the sound. I'm proud of the aesthetic and the vibe. And it's like, it's not just about playing a bunch of songs in a row. And, you know, I think I was maybe not, I'm a bit of a late bloomer. I don't think I was ready to do a live record until
now. So funny to say that you're a late bloomer when,
yeah,
you know,
we know you from
20 years ago, or how long has it been? 15 years?
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
15
me,
years? Do you feel that way? Because I feel like it's so awesome and cool. But I did read that you said, I was able to persevere after having success out of the gate, which is, I thought was an interesting choice of words. That having huge, giant success.
Yes.
In what, 2002? Breakout star. That you had to then persevere in order to get to where you are now.
Yes.
Which I think it sounds like you... I mean, is it Liberman?
Yes.
Liberman is such a beautiful record, and it is so different than anything else you've done. And so it does seem like you've arrived at this new place. But it's interesting, the feeling of, like, having to persevere through that success.
Yes.
Well, and a late bloomer.
Persevere is the right word, because not everyone comes out of the box in the way that they really are and the way they should be seen, or that, you know, like, I will say when you don't have – I was so young – and I was also very much a cog in a huge machine, the major label machine. And I had to get my footing after that. And if I was to really think through a career and the way I wanted to present myself and the way it should be marketed and the way all these decisions that take so much thought, it would have looked differently. It would have looked different, but it was like, oh, I'm this girl. I'm like marketed as the anti-Britney. The album is produced super slick by my boss, you know. And then you grow up, and I had to just sort of rewrite my story for myself so that I could feel like I can actually do this for the rest of my life. Yeah. You know.
That's such an interesting time stamp. The anti-Britney. Yeah. That is when it was, isn't it?
That's what they called me. No, I love me some Britney.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
No, but that was that time. And I'm just thinking, like, I was a total, like, you girl, not Britney girl. Mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. know, you, like, I could project myself onto you much more easily than totally. I was yeah. Britney at Catholic school.
But it was still, in a way, just as corporate in terms of the model of how yeah, they
right.
sold it.
Right.
Totally.
It was
yeah,
my
it doesn't
songs.
Mean that it was still you.
It was right. my songs, but it's still... And you know what? That does work for some people. Uh-huh. Some people come out of the gate and it's like, this is it. This right. is yeah. the road that I want to be on.
Uh-huh.
And other people have to rewrite it.
Right.
And, you know.
I mean, there's a difference between feeling like, okay, I've really had to evolve. But the success that you saw and with the music that was your music, even if it wasn't exactly how you would in retrospect have packaged it, like that... trajectory is still has gotten you to this point. Do you right. still feel that way? Right. I mean, are you
right? I think you it's very important to take note of how all of your past experiences, whether you enjoyed them or not, how they lead you to where you are. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
you cannot be just hating on everything behind
right.
you.
Right.
It's yeah. just, I can't carry that with me. Yeah,
right.
So, for sure, it's not.
I mean, the beautiful music you're making today, maybe you were pushed to make that because of how you feel about the earlier stuff.
Yeah, who knows? You know,
who knows?
I try not to spend too much time about thinking about it. Once I kind of in my mind reconciled my 20s, uh-huh. you know, I think I'm so, and especially becoming a mother and I'm a wife, I feel very connected to my instincts. It's just a clearer voice in my head now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that makes you feel more secure about your aesthetic decisions.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're just in
this
it
is
to
so
make
true about being
beautiful.
In your 30s.
Yes.
I think
definitely.
We're all around the same age.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's you're describing how I feel about my 20s versus my 30s
totally.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask you guys. I think a lot of women that I know in their 30s feels similar.
Definitely.
It felt great to cross that threshold.
Absolutely.
I think I freaked out when I was like 28 about turning 30.
Yeah.
I could like feel it. I was like,
yeah.
no. And then I crossed 30. I was like, whew.
Yes.
That was good.
Yes.
And
yeah.
you were very open about a lot of sort of like real life struggles mm-hmm. and things that you had to deal with that led you here as well, which was probably a choice. You know, you could have not done that. You could have been quieter.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean,
yeah,
how do you feel about that?
What is that decision to open up about, you know, difficulties with drinking, drugs, mm-hmm. you know, mental health? Is that
reproductive stuff?
That,
like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all,
yeah,
could be very tough.
Yeah.
For me, I learned through, okay, so I used to be very, very, very closed off and private when it came to those kinds of things, like kind of obsessively.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, felt like a sinking ship kind of, because of course, like human beings do better with connection.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know. So once I came out of like that isolation period and I would start expressing my own struggles, I found that so many people instantly you connect to human beings and it feels so good and everyone is like grateful, but at the same time it's really that like it's just that feeling, the word that just keeps coming to mind is connection.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Don't overthink it, you know, stay classy. But if something really like my ectopic miscarriage,
yeah.
for instance, I was like, what is happening to me right now? I don't
yeah.
how come no one's told me about this? How come no one talks about this? It's
yeah.
like I understand why no one talks about it, but for me, I think more and more I've accepted the fact that I just have to express the experience,
uh-huh.
and you know, it then it diffuses it.
Yeah.
You know?
And what was the choice there? Did you put it into music so much? Like, how did it get reported on?
Oh, I wrote a note on my Facebook because I had to, well, I actually don't even know how to get onto my Facebook, but I wrote a note and I sent it to Rashawn because I had to cancel some shows because I had to have surgery.
Okay. Mm.
And I was like, I'm not going to just be like, oh, due to
she's sick.
Exhaustion.
right.
And, it, you know, I'm like, I'm going to tell people what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
especially with women's reproductive rights and the whole situation, I just feel very, very open about expressing what's going on.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. And your moment at Nashville Pride, talking about your sexuality in front of a bunch of people, was a huge moment for a lot of your fans and LGBTQ community.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
is another example of, I think, people finding a connection with you.
Yeah.
Which can only help the audience and help your art. And
yeah.
Yes. I felt good about that, too. That was funny, though. I thought I was just talking to the people in front of me.
Uh-huh.
I had just flown in from England for that show. I was working on Rabbits on the Run at the time, which was my first album I had ever done outside of the major label system. So it was like, I was literally in the middle of nowhere outside of London. Flew in to do the show. Had no idea about, like, I guess I knew about YouTube and stuff, but like, and I like know what Perez Hilton is. This is the time like Perez Hilton.
Yeah, it's like 2008.
But I had no idea it was actually me performing and making that statement to the world.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, not
my
just.
Yeah, like my family and that was in the England or like Egypt. Right. They're like, or my mom's like, Vanessa, I'm getting texts from family members. Like, she was fine with it, but she was like, you know, she's more private than I am.
It's great that you didn't have that understanding, maybe. I don't know if you would have been a little more timid to do it.
I probably wouldn't have changed much, but...
But it's interesting, your career...
Surprised.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a strategy.
Right.
Like,
it wasn't
like,
now
that I have a huge megaphone, I'm going to say it.
Right.
It wasn't strategic.
Right. But it's funny how your career has so spanned our... you know, way of communicating and technology and everything. I mean,
yes,
yeah,
that's
it was the days.
Old.
No, I mean,
when you start,
you start on TRL. Like, that's what
AD.
It was.
This is AD. I
AD.
Was on TRL. Do you
TRL.
Remember TRL?
Oh,
I
yeah.
Have a plaque.
Those were the days.
Yeah. You have a plaque?
It's framed.
What plaque
they made
did
it
they
for
give
me.
You?
They sent me a
just
plaque.
So you were on TRL?
No, because I had a number one video mm-hmm. or something.
Which, by the way, has 144 million views on YouTube.
Which one, Ordinary Day? I mean, 1,000 Miles?
1,000 Miles, which is
wild.
Cool.
I mean,
too bad I'm not getting a dollar for every one of those views.
Preach, sister.
Just saying.
Yeah. Wait, okay.
I don't.
This is the only question I'm going to ask directly about this song. I just wonder, because you put it on Earlier Things Live.
Yeah.
What is your relationship with that song now?
It's good. It's fine. It's like I play it first
okay.
at every show, and
that's
I like
good.
Every day. It's
I think
like,
that's so
did
smart.
That become like you figured that out that would sort
I
of
figured,
diffuse or
yes.
something?
I like, feel like that's good for you and yeah. the audience.
Yes,
yeah.
definitely. So for the majority of the people that are there, to hear these records, uh-huh. particularly the records that started releasing in 2011.
Yeah,
and for the other people that don't really know that stuff. And or it's just like that's their YouTube go-to song mm-hmm. and they want to have that night out where they're like drunk yeah. singing to the song, I can do that first and they can get out of the way because
right.
actually our show is like very intense and moody and
uh-huh.
like it's chill but you can't be like screaming because right. we're like a
right.
duet right now and so we figured that out the hard way on the last tour for the people that drink more and more and more throughout the show and just start
screaming it louder and louder,
like berating you. Yeah, so we just like, we started
just do it out of the gate.
Yeah, we start with that song.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably a struggle for any artist that's been around for a while, is like when how to bust out the old stuff that's like a consistent crowd pleaser.
Totally. Do you get like bachelorette parties coming to your show?
No, I have not had that. I've had a huge collection of the strip club let out like right in the middle of our show, and they all came to our show, and it was like this little old theater, and they came in.
Wait, a group of men or women or both?
A group of women.
Okay.
And they were letting loose, and they.
That's funny.
That was when I was like, all right, we are only playing that song first.
Yeah.
Plus, it's not something that I'm not nostalgic, so I'm not trying to keep people there so that they,
totally.
Oh, they're going to stay because they want to hear that song. Like, that is the kind of attitude that I'm like, you know what? We'll give this to you first.
Yeah.
And then hopefully you're like, oh, wait, there's something else going on here. I want to stay. Or you'll be like, all right, I got it.
Right. Yeah.
I'm leaving. I'm out.
Totally.
But, yeah.
No, go ahead.
So 1,000 miles you wrote after you were signed to A&M, is that right? But ordinary day. No.
I wrote them all before.
All before you were, so you were discovered. You were like writing songs and recording them in your parents' house.
Yeah.
On, what was it then? Like just like a
4-track.
Okay. And with the thought in mind, like, I got something. I'm writing these songs. I'm singing them. I'm playing them. I'm going to go for this. Like you just.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it was like, I thought I could make an album. I ended up getting a publishing deal before I got a record deal.
Crazy.
I think in hindsight, though, it was really because of Ahmet Erdogan's attention that it all just sped up so quickly.
Wow, there's a name.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to, he worked with, help me.
Everyone. He signed everyone.
Like,
he founded Atlantic Records.
Okay. Right.
You How'd know, you connect with
the Rolling Stones? My father's a pilot and was flying his friend. He's a corporate pilot.
Was he the one who developed Ray Charles? Is that right?
I think he signed Ray Charles.
Okay. Yeah.
He was in Ray.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
okay.
His character's in
like,
Ray.
Like, I can see someone playing him in my mind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. You know
thank you.
And that little 4-track tape I made, my dad gave to this man. And said, well, my daughter's a singer. I know you know Ahmet Erdogan. Would you pass this on to him?
There you go.
And he did. And he not only did he listen to it, which is like a miracle.
Right.
Is he called me personally. Called me. I was still at ballet school. He left a message for me in the dorm on the like bulletin board. It was for me. And it said, OMAD called. Because whoever wrote it didn't know the name. And
that's awesome. Like, the message that changed.
I was like, who's OMAD? And then they left a number, and then I finally put it together. I called my dad, and he was like, I gave the tape to his friend. Maybe it's Ahmet.
Did you freak out? Did you understand?
Funny. Yeah.
Did you have visions of your future? Like, holy,
Well, I couldn't think that far ahead. I was just trying to get through, like, how do I meet this? So do I call it now?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Wow. Awesome. So the songwriting started in high school and just.
Yes.
Yeah. Whew. But. What made me think of that then is the shifts that happened from you're writing these songs yourself to being signed to this big label and having this team that changes the production, changes the sound, right? Mm-hmm. They like wanted to change the arrangements. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if 1,000 miles, an ordinary day, and these songs off your first record didn't sound the way that you like imagined them and can even remember that now.
Well, I will say this. I was like just... Like we talk about malleable early artists, I wasn't someone that had much of an awareness of engineering. And I think the way a record is recorded, the producer is so huge. And I didn't know enough about that and how I felt about the sonics of how a record should be recorded for me to have any kind of say that anybody would take seriously. So I just kind of stayed quiet and let whatever happened, you know, but I tried to get involved when I could, but I didn't, you know, I'm just kind of looked at myself as like, well, I'm just kind of the writer and then I'll play it as best as I can during the session. And then like all the other stuff just is going to happen. And it's just all going to sound, I guess, the way these guys make it sound.
Yeah.
You know, that's people sometimes just get really lucky early on if they fall into the lap of a producer that happens to be perfectly in line with how they want to sound 10 years later.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a miracle, but it happens, you know.
Do you feel like Liberman is the most truly you album so far?
I think that's like a real baseline for me.
Yeah.
I think Rabbits on the Run was like the entryway to Liberman. Rabbits was like that collaborative record with these artists I never thought I'd get to work with. And it really gave me the confidence to make Liberman.
Yeah.
And so here
when
I am.
When did you leave New York to go to Nashville?
Like 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does Nashville life suit you?
I love it. I have we have land. I have a car. I'm a Dodge driver.
Nice.
All right.
Did you pick up a little bit of a drawl down there?
I don't. Only when I say tile.
Okay.
Tile.
I feel like even when you say Liberman a little bit.
We have to pause for a second.
Sure.
Are you on time?
Yeah, let's.
She has to go.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
Great. Let's do it.
Okay. So we're talking about your move to Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just wondering if you feel like you were able to have kind of a new phase in your artistry and career by moving there that you wouldn't have been able to have if you had stayed in New York.
I don't know. It's more personal than that, I think. I am so lucky to have the family I have and such a peaceful, awesome thing. I just wasn't sure if I'd ever get to do that, you know?
Like have a stable home life.
Yeah. Something I really want to go back home all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm just starting to write now. My baby is 2 now. So it's like, it's just starting up again. I go through periods where I don't write for a while and then I'll just start writing a record.
Yeah.
There's never been such a gap for you. You've consistently been releasing records. So even if it might feel to you that there's I'm sure that there is actually this gap in writing, but you have been consistently putting out records every couple of years. So that's
well,
cool.
Ask Rashawn about that, because actually the distance between Rabbits and Liberman was like 4 years. But for me, for some reason, that's like, you know, on average what it's been taking. This one might come out a little bit sooner. Let's see.
The next one?
I don't want to jinx it.
Are you writing?
I'm not even close to done, so I shouldn't have said anything.
How does it feel?
I was going to ask about a next one.
Yeah,
so.
That's all I got to say about that.
There will be one.
There will be one.
That's exciting enough.
Yes, yes, thank you.
And you're right now you're with Dynalone Records?
Yes.
How's that going so far?
I've loved it. I've really loved it.
They've been
very supportive, and we submitted Liberman to them completely done without a name on it. So we wanted a real partner that was based on the music. And if they thought it was going to be easy to make this thing work because of my name from 15 years ago, it's not going to work. You know, like this has to be sold or promoted and or distributed based on what it is, which is sometimes a struggle if you have like a name in almost a completely different genre from before. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So I was so thrilled that, you know, we were able to just submit this album without feel confident to just not put a name on it and just see what happened, you know.
That's
cool. So that's why we're together.
That's nice. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to mention to people who are listening and can't see that you are wearing red today.
Correct.
Is that for all our fellow sisters out there?
Of course.
There?
The fact that we even have to have a day to remind people what it's like to not have women is insane. Mm-hmm. But here we are.
Here we are.
As we persist.
Yeah. I appreciate your political activism on social media. It's rad.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know how anyone can not be at certain times. But you know what? I think it's important. And I really thought about this a lot before I left for tour because I was nervous about security. Once I get on the stage, as we do our show, that is for, like I was talking earlier, that is about connection. That is about a place where people can take a break from their lives, their stress, and just lose themselves in a dreamy show. And that's where that's the space that I do not dive into that really, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting topic for a lot of us is how you reconcile being an artist with all the other needs that are happening with our citizens right now.
Yes.
And if it feels futile to be an artist right now or if it feels more vital than ever.
Yes. Well, of course, it feels more vital than ever because people turn to art humans love art. That's what how they lose themselves and how they connect to some other side of our brain that you can only do through art, whatever medium that is.
Right.
And the other thing is, artists are, like my husband pointed out so astutely, we're all small business owners. So this affects all of us. This is not like, shut up. I've heard so many comments like, shut up, you're whatever celebrities talking, you know, like who are you to be complaining? And it's like, wait, like, what do you think we are? Like we have businesses that we run. Just because we're artists doesn't mean like we like subsist on like fairy dust right. And don't have homes and, you know, cars and need health insurance and, you know, all of those things. Right. So we're all in this together. Yeah. That's how I look at it.
Totally. Do you feel that the climate is different now that you're on tour? I feel like it's a very interesting time for someone to be on tour with everything that's happening.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's...
And that you're seeing all different parts of the country.
Yeah, it's powerful. And then it's also like, oh, wow, like this is, it's important. I think being traveling a lot, period, is what gives you perspective. Mm-hmm. You can't live in your bubble. You mm-hmm. can't just talk to people who are like-minded. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's good for us, you know, to find the bridge between. That's like the key to it all, you know.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not, the music that you're playing is certainly... A beautiful place of release. Like you can come and just enjoy it. It does. You don't have to.
Yeah. Thanks. We need that. Yeah. That's what I like too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this song I'm going to play actually is called Blue Pool. It's from Liberman, and it's very much about. It's kind of about in my head the way a woman's mind works and how it's like, this. So it's a forest, and then there's like this secret garden area like way, way, way deep inside, and there's like this door you have to find, but you'll never find it. But once you do find it, like you're in. It's good. I mean, that's kind of what the courses nice. Are. I guess it's a good time to play the song.
Yes. All right. Awesome. Vanessa, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you guys.
It's so nice to see you again near that gray blue pool in LA. I close my book, move my bag, need some space, cause it's time to give that sun a break. Tell me now how these few years have been, what is living to honor the past. And I have been well, I say through a smile, these feelings they come and go fast. Cigarette and see the fame in your eyes. Oh, sing me the new song you sing. And time for you and I was never quite right. That matters and means everything. Cause the garden walls broke away. Before you know, you're outside of it. And the ivy's coming in. It's so beautiful, you can find it. Time. She's always kept you on her good side. Some people, they still fight their fate. I understood clear what you said with your eyes. They all speak in different ways. But the garden walls broke away. Before you know, you're outside of it. And the ivy's coming in. It's so beautiful.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.